Good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to Sports Talk here on the Big 870. Mike Dottiglio along with Charlie Long in studio. Steve Geller will join us at 5:40. Is it our pick six segment today, Charlie? We'll work that out on that pick six, but we'll do real good with all that. And at 4:20 or a little after is Tulane Tuesday, and we'll have on with us the head football coach of the Green Wave, John Summerall. Come on, talk to us about this weekend's game for the Green Wave. And at 5:20, one of our best guests we have, NFL insider, former NFL player Mark Slareth, will join us to talk about Saints, NFL all across the board. And at 6:25, it'll be Pelicans playing their final preseason game of the season. And we'll have on with us Ali Cosell, who covers the NBA. Want to tell everybody that the Pelicans take on the Houston Rockets tonight in Houston. You can hear that game live right here on the Big 870 WWL AM pregame. And then at 6:30, that's the pregame. And at 7 o'clock, tip off. And while the Pelicans are on 870, we'll continue with regular programming of Sports Talk, followed by the Saints Hour on WWL at 105.3 WWL.com and streaming live on the Odyssey app. And at 8 o'clock, the Pelicans will be on both WWL AM and FM and across all of the WWL multimedia platforms. Big trade today in the National Football League, no surprise. The Jets sent a conditional third-round pick, which could turn into a second, to the Las Vegas Raiders for Davante Adams. Davante can help any team in the NFL. He's that good. This is all or nothing at all for the Jets. They have thrown every chip in to try to win with Aaron Rodgers. This is all orchestrated by Aaron in the ear of Woody Johnson, the owner, to try to win now. And after watching them last night with drop passes, with penalties and two missed field goals, and their offensive line play is maybe a step up from the Saints, but not much better. This is a football team trying to win and doing everything possible to do it in 2024. So to give up a conditional third-round pick, there is some clauses to it that it could go up to a second, and they will take on the full salary. And so for the Raiders, he sort of you got rid of him, got a third-round pick, got rid of the salary, taking over the whole gambit there for the Jets. And for Aaron Rodgers, it's a reunite moment with Davante Adams, and he's pushed this now for quite some time. He talked about it on different broadcasts in the summer about Davante and how they always sort of were in sync together to make it work in Green Bay. And it was an awesome combination to watch. Now, it is a situation where Davante is 31 years old. He will turn 32 in December. His contract really is, you're not going to eat that contract for next year. So what you'll have a situation is this a nod, wink, wink deal of, hey, listen, we'll work something out in the offseason to make this a two-year deal for Davante Adams. And I'm sure that talk has already happened between Davante Adams and his crew to work this out with the Jets. But this is all about Aaron Rodgers. And, again, when you have the ear of the owner at that point in time, you're going to get a lot of things done. And he's got the ear. You can't tell me he didn't have a play in Robert Saleh being fired and what happened there. Again, he denies everything, said he had talked to the owner the day before, but they didn't talk about the head coaching job. Come on, that doesn't even pass the smell test. In the other trade today, the Buffalo Bills acquired Amari Cooper from the Cleveland Browns and a 2025 sixth-round pick. And in exchange, they gave up a third-round pick in 2025 and a 2026 seventh-round pick. So basically what you did, you gave up a third-round pick for Amari Cooper. That's how you could sort of cut it at this stage. Amari's a good player. He's never been looked at as, say, a top seven or eight receiver in this league. He's had some dropsies now in the games he's played recently. He hasn't been the most focused guy, but it gives the Bills now, along with Keon Coleman, two big target receivers in that cold weather, Try to help out Josh Allen. The running game, and it worked last night with Ray Allen, who we saw at Kentucky, how good of a player he is. And
yeah, no James Cook, no problem.
Yeah, because Bobby and I had wondered about why the point spread changed from 3-1. And then, bang, it came up late. Mm-hmm. Cook was out, changed the point spread. We talked about this being a very close game between the two. Jets missed two field goals yep. in this spot. Numerous drop passes that could have gotten. But Cooper now goes to Buffalo to team up with Keon Coleman. And they got a couple of really good tight end prospects. And Knox and
Kincaid.
And, man, Kincaid. I think the world of him as a player. I think he's one hell of a football player at tight end. So they got some weapons there now for Josh Allen. And it's not a push every chip into the middle of the table, but boy, they got the two hands, and it's about three quarters of the way.
No, Devontae's move is definitely more of a chips to the center of the table move, like you kind of mentioned, Mike, than maybe going out and grabbing Amari. And as you kind of said during the bite that I used for the Sports Flash today, Amari's never been like a top five guy, but he's a five-time Pro Bowler. That's not worth nothing. I mean, he's a solid, solid pickup.
He's a good player.
Yes, absolutely. And it was a receiver room for the Bills that, you know, you have Khalil Shakir and Curtis Samuel, but you don't have the guy, right? You don't have that dude. The closest thing you have to it is probably, as you were mentioning, it's Dalton Kincaid.
And Keon.
And Keon, but Keon's a rookie, and he's been kind of inconsistent to start his NFL career. But you go out and get a veteran guy that you can trust to be your wide receiver one this year for the push to the playoffs. And, you know, last night while we were watching the game, it showed, you know, the effect that that game had on the AFC East. Because you see what's happening in Miami with Tua going out with another concussion, and he's missing some time. We don't know exactly when he'll be back. But now you're looking at the Dolphins with a 2-3 record. The Patriots have lost five straight. They're now 1-5. They're just trying to see what they have in their rookie quarterback, Drake May, that they took the third overall pick. So it's a two-man race, basically, in the AFC East, it feels like. And Buffalo, by winning it, I know that they said that, you know, with Buffalo winning that game, they have like an 80-something percent chance to now win the division. And we're 6 weeks in, which is kind of crazy to think about. But they're now 4-2. They're in command, and they bolstered that one basically weakness on that roster with the receiving room, with a stud in Amari Cooper. I love that trade for them.
Yeah, I think it was a good deal for him. And he brings you some veteran experience to the table. He is a guy that knows how to work that short, intermediate passing area very, very well. And so to team him up with Keon, and I think Keon Coleman, he'll just get better with more playing time. He's gotten much better as a route runner. He is he's hard to knock off his route because he is a real physical guy, and it's his run-after-catch ability. People say, oh, he don't run that fast. He don't run that fast. Wait till you get the ball in his hands. They got track speed, and they also got speed after the catch. That's what Keon's got. He's got speed. Oh, yeah. And so, you know, we saw it was back-to-back weeks. I know Herb Tyler and I talked about it. We did our pregame for LSU about, you know, last year it was Keon at Florida State going up against LSU. And I know Keon wanted to play here at LSU. They didn't offer until very late in the process. He goes to Florida State. Trey Harris was a guy that, former quarterback at Como High School, throwing the football to a guy by the name of Malik Nabers, who was pretty good. Mm-hmm. And, he goes to Louisiana Tech. When he left Tech, his school of choice was LSU. They did talk to him late, but, you know, sometime God puts you in the right spot, and he put him in the right spot. And, man, thank God for LSU fans, he dropped that first pass because that would have been a touchdown. Trey don't drop many of them. Then he catches a much tougher pass in the end zone over the top of an LSU defender. So goes to show you this state is loaded with wide receiver prospects. When you're talking about a Keon Coleman and a Trey Harris, don't even go to LSU. And look all the receivers LSU has produced over the last few years. When we come back, we'll talk to the head football coach of the Tulane Green Wave, John Summerall, right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelia along with Charlie Long in studio, and it's our Tulane Tuesday segment. So on our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, we have on with us the head football coach of the Tulane Green Wave, John Summerall. Tulane Tuesday is brought to you by Bayou Black Electric, your electrical connection in the heart of South Louisiana. Learn more at BayouBlackElectric.com. Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Hope all is well. And, man, you got some Chamber of Commerce weather.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. Yeah, we're getting a little bit of fall now, man. It's starting to feel like October. I looked at the forecast the rest of the week. It's supposed to be in the 70s, looks like. It'd be a good week.
Coach, somebody asked me to ask you this, and so I thought it was a good question. What did you do on your Saturday off? Well, not playing, I should say, because you don't get the day off.
Well, you know what? I took the Saturday off.
What?
So we practiced.
Oh.
Yeah, we did the whole day, kind of. Now, I was watching everybody else work, but what we did is on Monday last week, we lifted and did some meetings. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we practiced. And then Thursday and Friday, I recruited both of those days and went to high school games here locally Thursday night, Friday night. And then Saturday morning, I watched my fifth grade son play in his football game against the sixth graders at his school. So they had their little scrimmage on Saturday morning, and then left there, and I watched everybody else play, everybody else work, and might have had a couple of beverages at my house and watched all that happen. But we enjoyed the day, and then Sunday morning after church got back to work, and we've been grinding away trying to get ready for the game this week.
Coach, I always wonder about health because, you know, midway into the season, or basically you're there now, you always sort of banged up, and that bye week gives you an opportunity to kind of heal up a little bit if it's not a major injury. Also, too, about a young man that he plays high school football not far from where I live in Chaz Preston, who's been dealing with a leg injury and looks as though he might be close to coming back, that he can hit the field.
Yeah, Chaz is close. So he ran 19 miles an hour on a GPS deal today, which means he's almost to full speed, really, because he's about a 20 to 21 mile an hour guy at tops, probably. And so he's nearing full speed. Tomorrow he's going to get to run some routes and do some more football-driven activities than that, running more of the trainers. And so tomorrow he's going to get a little bit more football time. You know, if he's available this weekend, it'd probably be more in spot duty. Won't be, you know, he'd be on a pitch count if he is available. He's kind of questionable right now. I'm not going to put him out there until I see him practice with the guys. But he's getting really close. I'm excited about his return. I think he's fired up. You know, he's relieved and excited about the opportunity that's in front of him. And I think he'd be a great addition to what we've already been doing offensively. Man, Chaz would be another weapon for us to have, and he catches the ball well. He's a big, strong, physical guy, and it's fun to see him kind of getting close to being ready to go again, because I think he can help our team, and I know how ready he is to go play.
Any other injuries that so from an injury standpoint, you're looking pretty good at this stage?
Yeah, we're in pretty good shape, all things told. I mean, you know, six games in the regular season, you got bumps and bruises.
Right.
Alex Bauman, our tight end, he had to leave the game against UAB before the bye week. Really ended up probably not being as significant as we were concerned during the game. Major injury. He's probably questionable or doubtful for this week right now. I would say, could he play? Maybe. Will he play? I don't know yet. Like, if he's not quite ready, we'll hold him. And then Caleb Rantzar, our nickel, was limited in practice today. Probably will be available, but all in all, we're in decent shape. You know, everybody at this point in the year has got some guys out.
Coach, I heard Nick Saban talk about this over the weekend, and as you get to the middle, to the latter part of the season, you know, his deal is always about the physicality of being able to establish that running game very early, because now other teams are dealing with nicks and scrapes along their defensive front seven. And he said the other part of it, too, is because the way the game is played today, has so much pitch and catch, now it's given a little bit of time for your pass rushers to get into that groove, because I don't think anything affects a game today more in the fourth quarter if it's pro football or college football. If you can get a pass rush, man, you scared the bejesus out of that quarterback if you have to him, you know, on every play, and they got to catch up and try to throw the football. Those two elements of your game, being able to run the football, control the clock, and also that consistent pass rush.
Yeah, you know, people talk about, you know, throwing to score, but you have to run to win.
Right.
I don't care what your offensive system is. You can be a spread or a pro style or whatever, but if you can't run the football consistently, it's hard to win consistently. And so we've been running the football with success, and early down success is critical, staying on schedule. And then, you know, from a pass rush standpoint, you have to earn the right to rush the passer. What I mean by that is, first off, as a team, if you put them in predictable pass, so you went on first down, second down, you give them a third and long, well, now you know you're going to get more passes in that situation, all right? And so putting them in predictable pass helps by a down and distance standpoint. And then what we've been able to do the last couple weeks is you get a lead, well, now they got to throw to catch up. They can't be patient and run the ball to stay in the game. They feel like they have to, you know, try to hit some chunk plays down the field. Well, those take time to develop, and your pass rushers can pin their ears back and go a little bit more direct to the quarterback and hunt. And so the run game on offense sets a lot of things up. And then to pass rush, man, you got to stop the other team and get a lead to put them in those situations too.
Give us a little bit of a scouting breakdown on Rice.
Yeah, you know, I think they're extremely well coached. I really have a lot of respect for how they play the game. When I watch the tape, man, they're very detailed. They're disciplined. They don't beat themselves. Like I said, a lot of respect for this outfit we're getting ready to play. Offensively, it starts with their running back, this number zero. Man, he's their leading rusher, but he's also their leading pass catcher. He's as a complete of a skill player as I feel like I've seen in our conference to date. He's just a really good football player, and he's the kind of guy you'd like to have on your team, to be quite honest with you. That's how he plays the game. They got quality receivers. The quarterback is Kurt Warner's son. So, you know, he's a high football IQ kid. He's smart. He knows where to go with the football. He reads coverage as well. He distributes it well. Really efficient player. The O-line's veteran. They got an older group there. And then defensively, they're one of the top teams in the country right now in creating negative plays, TFLs, and sacks. And so we've got to win up front. Their D-line's big and physical. You know, I don't think their record's very indicative of what kind of team they are. I really have a lot of respect for this team we're getting ready to play. And I told our guys today, we didn't practice great today. And I told our guys, if we practice like that, we're going to get our butt kicked on Saturday. I mean, it'll be embarrassing. And so we got to get ready to play because this team's coming in here. They're hungry. They got a little confidence with the win last week over Texas San Antonio. And so we got to be ready to strap it up and go play the brand of football we need to play to win.
Coach, I was going to bring up Dean Connors, the running back you spoke about, as both a runner and a receiver. And a lot of times when you watch Rice, they use that little short pass. It's almost an extended handoff. They just want to try to catch you one-on-one downfield where he can beat that one guy, and then he's out into open field.
Yeah, they get the ball to him a lot of different ways. They're good in the screen game as well. They get the ball out quick to all of their skill guys. They play the game in some empty sets. So they put some stress on you defensively, but it all starts with the running back. I mean, that young man's a fine football player. And their whole offense, it starts with him. And if you don't stop him, you can't win. And so he's going to be a big part of, you know, us having to be aware of where he is and different ways we're trying to get him the football. Because, like I said, it's not just a run game with him. It's a throw game with him, too, that we have to be on point with where he is and how they're trying to utilize him.
And he's a well-built guy. He's no small back. I mean, he's pieced together pretty good. Now, how do you got them guys from Hawaii? I guess, you know, that's why they got name, image, likeness. But for him to come from Hawaii to Texas, that's a pretty good little trip. You can't take the card. I know that. Charlie?
Coach, you know, we're at the midway point of the season, and I just want to get your thoughts on the AAC this year. Obviously, we can't really break down a game because you were on the bye week. As you mentioned, you took the day off. But looking at the AAC and, you know, Army's first year in the American Athletic Conference and the season that they're having, and then Navy, who you play basically, what, 4 or 5 weeks out from now, compare top 25 squads, but you're right up there with North Texas. There's 5 undefeated squads early on in AAC play. What's kind of your gauge on the conference so far?
Yeah, I think you've seen some teams have success that maybe people didn't maybe have picked at the top. You know, Memphis is favored to win our league in the preseason stuff. You know, the Army and Navy, I've coached against Army the last 2 years. When I was at Troy, we played them in 22 and 23. And, 22, we beat Army at home at Troy in a rock fight. We won 10-9. I mean, it was like playing, you know, 1950s football. And then last year we beat them like 19-0. It was a physical game again. Both those teams, their offensive identity is so unique, and they're really not the same. Army's the true triple, three-back option stuff. Navy's a little different, and they're probably a little more aggressive with their pass game stuff, but they're so hard to prepare for in a week. You know, that's the thing people understand is, like, it's an offensive identity you don't see week in, week out. The vision lines for your players, the leveraging of the football, the quarterback being able to run, the way Army plays, their quarterback almost plays like a linebacker. He's a big physical dude. Navy's guy is really a true quarterback that just happens to be able to run 4-4 or 4-5. I mean, he's a talented kid. And they play the game the right way. You know, it's old school, tough, grinded out football. And I have a lot of respect for both those staffs and those teams. And North Texas has come on. Charlotte's come on. I mean, you're seeing some teams in this league really improve and take some steps forward. You know, Texas San Antonio has been a really good team for a while, and that's who Rice just beat. So this league, I think the parity top to bottom is probably better than people realize. And I think going into it, everybody just kind of had Memphis picked to win it. And I think you're looking at it going, man, there's a lot of teams in this league that are capable, and you have to be prepared week in, week out to play the best brand of football you can.
Coach, last question. You brought up that doing a little bit of recruiting last week with the week off. From a recruiting standpoint, okay, those 4- and 5-star guys, they may go elsewhere. You might be looking at a guy, let's say he's 6'4.5", and he's 255. He's, you know, that's a big man for a 17-year-old, but, man, some of them are coming in over 300 pounds. How much of a projection of you looking into the telescope down the road when you evaluate a player, that 250 or 260-pound offensive lineman is going to be a 300-pounder in 2 years? For you, and maybe even a year for you, the way some of them eat, that could get up there pretty quickly. Because one of the things I see, having doing scouting for so long, there isn't a lot of offensive linemen out there. And the real good ones, I mean, they're selective. And it's at the pro level and also at the college level. You don't have a lot of depth in most places there. So when you look at a high school player, how much do you look at that projection of what he might be in a year from now or 2 years from now?
Yeah, really, really a couple things you hit on there to start. The first one is, man, I'll be honest with you, I don't care if they're 2-star, or 5-star, or 9-star. If we think they can play, we're going to recruit them. And I really don't even care if they've got the big – like if they have the big offer, we're still going to go battle because – you know, let's say a kid does go to an SEC school. Well, he might be a year from now looking for a different fit if it's not going as good there as he had hoped. And so it's important for us as a staff to make sure we have relationships with all the guys coming out and evaluate all of them and to turn over every stone, particularly in this state. You know, this state's got so many good players. We're going to sign kids from all over the country, but, man, we better know these guys in our backyard first because we got great football in the state of Louisiana, in particular South Louisiana, you know. And so, we talk all the time about recruit and develop. And you talk about a big kid that may have some upside and some room to grow in the offensive line type projection. Man, that's the most developmental position in our game. It's also the hardest position to find enough good players at. And the O-line depth piece, man, I've been around several guys that were drafted. I had a kid at Troy a couple of years ago that was, I believe he's a third or fourth round. He was a fourth round draft pick by the Patriots, played center and guard. Well, he was a 2-star recruit out of high school, you know, and so wasn't a highly touted guy. And so a lot of that O-line piece is development. And so often to me, man, the thing that we value in the evaluation process is a guy tough and does he love football? You know, tough guys that love football, they find a way to become their best. And they got to like to work, you know. And so we say all the time, if you train soft and you prepare soft, you play soft. And if you train hard and you prepare hard and you play tough, you know. And so you're looking for the physical makeup. You're looking for the mental makeup as well. And that thing, that part to me is probably just as important as the physical, because if a guy don't want to be any good, you can lead that horse to water, but you can't make it drink. You know what I mean? And so you got to get that. You got to get into get guys that love football and want to play. But the evaluation component of what a guy can become is so important.
Yeah, and especially at that position, because you know, I've said this before, other than the quarterback spot, I think center is the hardest position to play out on the field other than the quarterback spot, because you got to know what you know, and you better make damn sure that you get that snap right to the quarterback, not 90% of the time or 85%, 100% of the time, but you are relaying everything to the two guards, the guards related to the tackles. You started the quarterback up front for five people and sometimes six when you're talking about a tight end that's, you know, as an inline blocker. That's so difficult to project that young man at a high school level. Oh, 4 years from now or 2 years from now, he's going to be my starting center.
No doubt. Well, you can get receivers and DBs that walk in the door and they're just gifted and they're ready to go play.
Right.
But the like what you hit the nail on the head with that, talking about the center. Like you got to snap the football, then you got to make your own block. But we put a lot on the center in regards to communication and setting our protection, identifying the mic point, you know, identifying the front for the run game stuff, targeting some things. We do a lot of that to maybe take some of the pressure off the quarterback, in particular in our situation right now, where we have a young quarterback. He knows all those things, but we've tried to alleviate maybe some of the communication he's having to do on some of those things and put some of it on our center. And that guy's got to be a smart, headsy player that understands the game. He's got to be an extension of your offensive line coach in regards to how you're targeting things. And that's you're talking about the mental component, and then you got to go block a big 300-pound man across from you every play, you know, and so – and snap the ball. And so there's a lot of things that go into it. That's one of the most challenging things to do in our game, for sure.
Yeah, you're talking about one game you might be up against a 280-pound guy, and next game you're up against a 330-pound guy. Okay, that's a little bit of a difference there on kind of the challenges that quick guy, smaller guy makes, and then you got a big guy in the middle, and he tries to run you over like a road grader. It's the intrigue, and I just think today, if you loaded the bus, you ain't got a lot of guys saying, "Hey, I want to play offensive line. You know, I want to play receiver. I want to play tight end. I don't want to be no offensive lineman."
Hey, I told you I went to go watch my son's fifth grade game last week. You know, a bunch of those kids end up at my house some days, and if they go play in the park, none of them, they all want to be the all-time quarterback or the receiver. None of them say, "Hey, I want to go be the all-time snapper."
Yeah, right. Coach, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Always our pleasure, and good luck this coming Saturday against Rice.
Appreciate you guys. Have a great day.
All righty. That was our Tulane Tuesday segment brought to you by Bayou Black Electric, your electrical connection in the heart of South Louisiana. Learn more at BayouBlackElectric.com. We'll be back with more Sports Talk right after this break here on the Big 870 WWL. Back here on Sports Talk on the Big 870, Mike Dettelier along with Charlie Long in studio. Let's go to our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line. Let's go to Mark in the French Quarter. Mark in the huddle with Mike and Charlie.
Hey, Mike and Charlie, listen, I mean, that defense was so bad. They're
terrible.
There's not even words to even describe how bad it was, what you can do about it, and how you can fix it. So here's one of my resolutions, or here's one of my ideas. Every player on that defense should take whatever they earn in salary for that game and donate it to charity. Because they didn't earn it, and there's lots of people in this town that are hurting. And that was disgusting. And Mickey Loomis, he needs to donate his entire year's salary, because this is on him. These drafts since 2018 have been horrible. And I don't want to hear, well, it's the pro scouts or this or that. It's on Mickey to make sure. I mean, these drafts have been horrible. Horrible. And we are where we are because of the draft picks, And I think this defense is just too old and too slow. It looked good for the first couple of games. You start getting dinged up. You start getting into that second and third level of guys trying to fill in. Sorry, it's on Mickey.
That's kind of the crazy thing, though, isn't it? It's like the offense is really banged up, but the defense isn't that injured.
My thing about it is Pete
Warner's hurt.
Yeah, and okay, you are showing signs of age. But
yes.
This didn't happen this offseason. Okay, you've whiffed on picks. Mark, you're absolutely right.
You're not finding any argument from us here.
This is not about age at this point. Some of that comes into play, but you had guys selected that should have been ready to roll, and they're not. You missed on picks. Now, everybody does, but not this much. This all goes back to, we can talk about free agency, and it does help that you can go out and get a veteran at a certain spot. You got to hit on early picks. You got to hit on those draft choices. If not, you in a lot of trouble. My thing with the Bucks, they're the youngest team in the NFC right now when you look at it across the board.
The quote-unquote soft rebuild that we've praised them
for. Soft rebuild. In 3 years, every one of their draft choices is on the roster but one. In 3 years. So they picked right. When you lost Brady and Gronk and Fournette and somebody, and Dominican Sue, some of these guys that were brought in as sort of football mercenaries. And I get that part. You got to do it at that stage when you got Brady. But all of a sudden, they were able to hit on these draft choices and the one big free agent signee.
But also retaining their talent, like the Antoine Winfield Jr., who they spent a second-round pick on. The Tristan
Mike
Morris,
Evans,
spent
a veteran player.
But yes, but as far as like recent draft history, like draft picks within the past half decade, the guys that they've hit
Tristan
on.
Tristan Wirfs.
Yeah, Tristan Wirfs, you know, all these guys that they've landed those early picks on, they've kept them in-house, right? And the Saints, I mean,
there's been a lot of whiffs on draft day.
There's been a lot of whiffs. You just got to call it what it is.
And Mark, you're absolutely right. I mean, this falls back on that, Mickey's always talked about, he is the final say. Now he's getting help from Jeff Ireland, the scouting department, but he's got the final say. He's made that clear. And so this sort of falls right in his lap that all these misses comes back to either going along or making changes when you saw you weren't hitting on those draft choices. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this break. We're finishing up here in hour number one of Sports Talk on the Big 870. I want to thank Tulane head football coach John Summerall for joining us here on Sports Talk. And at 520, Odyssey NFL insider Mark Schlereff, hosts of the Stinkin' Truth podcast, will join us, talk NFL and the Saints. Lawrence, if you hold on, we'll catch you right at 5:10. We'll be back with more Sports Talk here on the Big 870 right after this news break.